SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
We are live right here. It is FFC on a Tuesday in June, June 20th to be exact. Football Full Circle on the Sports Grid Radio Network in Sirius XM Channel 159. He is Joe Lisi. That is the mastermind of the Pigskin. I am Ben Stevens. Lisi guy, great to be here once again on this Tuesday. Are the people begging, Joe, for us to talk a little bit of football on this Tuesday afternoon?
I'm begging you, Ben. Let's get with college football. I cannot wait for the season. Let me tell you, I looked over the slate as well, and I know I'm jumping into college football. There's some news and notes surrounding the NFL, but less than 70 days away, and at first glance, I said that week one wasn't that great, but there are some matchups that could solidify maybe early conference races. There's divisional games and conference games week one. That's what you want to see from the college football perspective, and I actually have, not a week zero, but I have a week one game that I already like from the spread gambling perspective. So we'll see how it plays out. We're just about 2.5 months away.
Well, we're going to need to hear what that play is for week number one. What catches Joe Lisi's eye for the opening full weekend of college football?
Well, we have a rematch in terms of week one, if I'm not mistaken, with Hawaii going on the road to Vanderbilt. You and I were both on Vanderbilt last year, laying the 6.5, 7-point number, got up to 7.5. They bet it back down, and then by game time, it got as high as I believe, maybe 8 points, and Michael Wright and the team just absolutely dismantled Hawaii in that matchup. They do start in terms of that week zero contest in Nashville, but then their week one real game, right, September Labor Day weekend, they face Stanford and new head coach Troy Taylor going to Hawaii. The line is already 9.5, and we know about the success of Hawaii week one, right? Prior to that game last year, they were 11-1, I believe, ATS. I love them catching 9.5 points, new offensive scheme. Stanford Cardinal, from the defensive perspective, not very good, especially in run support. And I think Hawaii could be a live dog at home the week of Labor Day weekend.
Troy Taylor making his debut for Stanford, Joe. A really good point, because where Taylor comes from is a solid FCS program at Sacramento State, where they were known for throwing the ball around the yard, accumulating a ton of points. What does that look like? Trying to restore Stanford football back to the pedigree where Jim Harbaugh and then David Shaw had brought it over the past 15 to 20 years, certainly on a downward trend at this moment, Lisi, and that's reflected in the win total for the Cardinal in 2022. It is 3.5, and the under is heavily juiced, Lisi, at minus 188. What do you make of the direction of this Stanford program now under Troy Taylor?
Well, Troy Taylor might be the guy to turn it around, but again, you're going from a methodical ball control type of attack to now five wide. We've seen this transition a couple of times. We're going to see it now with Wisconsin and Tanner Mordecai, and there's going to be growing pains. I mean, I think the biggest thing for Stanford, if you look at the last few years under David Shaw, go back to the days of Bryce Love and Christian McCaffrey, is that they were predicated on rushing the football and then obviously shutting down the run and working off of turnovers from the defensive perspective. It's been a slow erosion. Look, over 5 yards per carry, over 200 rushing yards allowed in terms of the defensive perspective, and they're averaging less than 4 yards per carry as a rushing offense. From 2017 till now, they've gone terrible in terms of the interior offense and defensive lines. They've regressed as opposed to progressed, and that's why they've been very inconsistent. I think it's going to take a couple of years, and that's why I think with week one and having that game under your belt for Hawaii, even though it's on the mainland, right? Having that game already to work out the kinks, coming back home and having a fresh Pac-12 opponent, I think they could be a live dog in that matchup.
It's a very good look, Joe. On a weekend that maybe most of the eye will not be brought to Stanford and Hawaii, it's an area where at 9.5 right now, with the Rainbow Warriors catching that at home as an underdog, a way to look. We'll have some Pac-12 conversations, Joe, because an update yesterday as it pertains to San Diego State, the Mountain West, and maybe SDSU, at least presumably, trying to leave for the Pac-12 conference. Joe, as we go to the SEC, though, you remember we were very delved into that week zero matchup out in Honolulu between Vanderbilt and Hawaii last year, because both you and I, you would convince me during the offseason to bet Vandy's win total with plus money to the over of 2.5 wins. It sailed through that number as Vanderbilt a season ago, Joe, after their coach Clark Lee said, we want to be a team that wins national championships, went 5-7. They won their first SEC game getting back to 2019, upsetting Kentucky on the road, and then backing that up the very next week against Florida in a 31-24 win. This Vandy team, Joe, it will be interesting to see what that progress looks like in 2023. The win total, still very modest for the Commodores. It's 3.5, the over having the juice this time at minus 170. Joe, do you think Vandy can take another year of progress into the SEC this season?
Ooh, it all comes down to schedule, Ben. I mean, that win total, we're talking, obviously, when you're 5-7, right? You're talking next step is at least 6-6, 7-5, right? Yep. I want to believe that, but I think they might duplicate another 5-7. I think that's asking a lot in such short a period of time.
Going 5-7 would be over that win total of 3.5. They're a 17.5-point favorite at home week zero in Nashville against Hawaii. Alabama A&M at Wake at UNLV, the non-conference slate for the Commodores. Maybe four wins right then and there. All right, more FFC up next here on the Sports Grid Radio Network.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
We are back live right here on FFC. It is Football Full Circle across the Sports Grid Radio Network and Sirius XM Channel 159. Lisi, as we know it, these summer months, especially end of May, early June, before we get to conference media day starting in late July and then fall camp returning, where kids are off campus, we're not doing summer workouts just yet, back on campus for a next college football season, a lot of realignment talk comes our way. And this past Friday, after we signed off the airwaves of FFC, we had San Diego State reporting from ESPN's Pete Thamel that sources were telling him that SDSU, Joe, gave the Mountain West a written letter, written notice, that the school, quote, intends to resign from the Mountain West Conference. SDSU asking the Mountain West for a one-month extension given unforeseen delays involving other collegiate athletic conferences beyond our control. End quote. What that means to me, Joe, the way that I read the tea leaves there, is that San Diego State, a natural fit, of course, given location and geography for the Pac-12, riding the high of appearing in the national title game in the men's NCAA tournament a season ago, is looking to move to the Pac-12. And so they were asking for written notice out of the Mountain West to allow an extension of sorts, as the Pac-12 media rights deal has not come to fruition yet. So without the Pac-12 TV rights deal there, San Diego State a little bit up in the air and uncertain their future in the conference and what that looks like, asking for an extension before they withdraw from the Mountain West. Well, the Mountain West replied yesterday, Joe, but first, your thoughts on San Diego State maybe looking to change conferences at this point.
Well, I understand the potential move, right? It's about increasing your brand. And San Diego State is one of the best and most consistent programs, obviously, in the Group of Five. They were there under Rocky Long and have continued under Brady Hoke, bowl winners and bowl contenders each and every year. But I told this to Carver the other night, and I'll get your take on it. Why a lateral move to the potential Pac-12? Wouldn't it make sense if they were willing? And obviously, all parties have to be involved. but if the Big 12 were to take on San Diego State, now I know geographically that sounds maybe out of context, but we have UCLA and USC moving to the Big 10. Why can't San Diego State move to the Big 12? Because it helps their brand, not just on the football field, but on the basketball side as well, with the potential of UConn moving there as well. They both squared off in the national championship game for hoops. I mean, what do we know about the Pac-12? If Washington and Oregon jump, is it even the Pac-12 at that point? You're making a lateral move for a $34 million potential buyout over the next couple of years. For what? You're trying to increase your brand, more brand exposure. And Carver brought this up, and I get it, but I don't necessarily feel it's a great synergy. They want to be the only team in terms of Southern California, with obviously USC and UCLA moving on. But if nobody's watching the product, it doesn't pay. I'd rather stay in the Mountain West for that matter. I mean, that's my only point. I could see the move if you're doing it for bigger and better, but the Pac-12 might not be in existence in a year.
And it will be interesting, Joe, to know what bigger and better looks like from a TV revenue perspective. That is the reason you go to join a Power 5 conference, certainly led by football. But if the Pac-12 cannot negotiate the final terms of its media rights deal, which I'll get to in just a second, Joe, what is the benefit for SDSU? They want to be the Southern California school out on the West Coast in the Pac-12 conference. What about being the Southern California school of the Big 12 that looks to have solidified its TV deal to be third in the pecking order, probably a decent distance behind both the Big Ten and the SEC, but still there, Joe, staying afloat. The Big 12, to their credit, Brett Yormark, now their commissioner, has made the future moves, if you will. They have had the foresight to see all the changing pieces around them, knowing OU and Texas leaving their conference. They have had the foresight to adapt to all of these changes on the landscape, where the Pac-12 at times, Joe, has seemed hesitant to do such a thing. The Big 12 has been aggressive in making the moves to make up for the loss of the Longhorns and the Sooners. Well, before we get to that, Joe, just one more thing. The Mountain West sending back a letter to San Diego State on Friday in response to the idea that SDSU had not requested formal notice of withdrawal, but the Mountain West saying in that latest letter they do not accept San Diego State's claim that they have given formal notice of resignation from the league and, quote, at this time, end quote, they will not approve any exceptions that San Diego State requested last week, the additional month before the departure, a reduced exit fee, or the ability to pay out the remainder of their grant of rights. So the Mountain West is not going out, Joe, without a fight. If San Diego State is going to depart the conference, they are going to be tasked with the hefty payout and the hefty fine of leaving early, like we have seen for USC, UCLA, Texas, and Oklahoma in the Big Ten and the SEC, respectively.
Yeah, and I don't blame the Mountain West. Why would you give it out to San Diego State? Why would you give them a discount to buy out of the conference? Makes absolutely no sense. Again, I wouldn't give them a buyout either. You know, a potential slashing rate. No, it's $17 million per year. Either you put up or you shut up. And at the end of the day, again, I think that is the best move for San Diego State. Should the Big 12 want them? They have BYU, which is more of a far west type of school, Midwest, far west, right? So now you add San Diego State, now you have BYU, you have San Diego State, you have UCF. You're starting to get now the whole nation covered from your perspective, along with Cincinnati. And that's really what you want to do, right? More eyes on your product. When you have a national audience as opposed to a regionalized audience, that means more sponsorship dollars, that means more eyes on your product, more revenue, and in days of NIL, that's what these programs want.
And there is always going to be those rumors and speculation surrounding teams like Arizona, Arizona State, and Colorado maybe making a more sensical geographic move back to the Big 12 as well. We know Colorado was a Big 8 team, a Big 12 team at times. It would be interesting to see if the Arizona schools were to make that move. Nothing substantially reported there that Colorado or Arizona are looking out of the Pac-12, but always the speculation, Joe, in college football on those message boards. I'll just say one final thing about the Mountain Mountain West with the Pac-12, because you're right, Joe. It is not necessarily a guarantee that if SDSU is even able to leave the Mountain West, that means the Pac-12 is on the horizon. And could it be some of those hiccups with the Pac-12 in this media rights deal that would open the door for a San Diego State to join the Big 12? When you think of one of the best basketball conferences with an Aztecs basketball program that has been one of the best in the country in the last 5 years in terms of winning basketball games and, of course, making it all the way to the national championship this past year. The reason, Joe, all of these convoluting factors are a part of it, and what I take away most from it probably, is the Pac-12 is far off from any potential media rights deal. This is something we expected to probably have come out around this time in the sports and college athletics academic calendar. It is not. And with San Diego State reiterating these things to the Mountain West, Joe, I don't think the Pac-12 is particularly close to signing a new TV deal either.
Look, why would, if you're a network, you don't know what you have. How could you sign a deal? UCLA and USC are out the door. You know that Oregon and UW are next. The Big Ten is going to make a move at both of those teams, right? If not, then I suggest the Big 12 do it. Why not get San Diego State, Oregon, and UW, start your own major network, you know, in terms of conference from a Big 12 perspective, and at the end of the day, now you're cooking with fire. The Pac-12 is going to be dead and buried. If Colorado jumps and all these other teams jump, it's going to be a lateral move for San Diego State. You're going to do the program more harm than good.
One final thing on Colorado on the other side of the break, because right now, Joe Lisi, they have received some of the biggest handle out of all teams in the Pac-12 to win the Pac-12. A team that won a single football game last year. Just one. Is that the prime effect coming the way to Boulder? We'll talk about it on the other side of the break here on Football Full Circle. It's that time of the offseason. Here we are in the middle to late portion of June. We're always looking forward to a new college football campaign. Some Coach Prime and Colorado talk up next here on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
We are back live right here on Football Full Circle. Sirius XM, channel 159, all around the Sports Grid Radio Network. Joe, as we get ready for 2023 in college football, there is going to be a ton of attention on a team that won just one game last year, just one single game, a 1-11 record for the Colorado Buffaloes. Well, the Buffs now have Coach Sanders, Deion Sanders, prime time as their head man in Boulder. So not only is there national attention, Joe, on Colorado, there's been a ton of betting attention on the Buffs as well. USC is the favorite to win the Pac-12. Around various books on FanDuel, they're 2-1. The Trojans on BetMGM plus 160. But according to BetMGM, Joe, the highest ticket percentage of Pac-12 conference championship game winners is Colorado. 46% of their tickets feature the Buffs winning the conference crown. The highest handle, 56%, is Colorado. The biggest liability for the BetMGM Sportsbook, Joe, is Colorado as well. This is a USC team that has a Heisman-winning quarterback in Caleb Williams coming back and Lincoln Riley. That's notability in itself. There is a team in Utah that won the Pac-12 a season ago that should not be slept on, and yet all of this, Joe, is focusing on Colorado, a team that might win more than a game this upcoming season. But even if they win more than one, Joe, it doesn't mean they make their way to a Pac-12 title game. Joe, would you spend your money on Colorado to win the Pac-12?
No, but I understand why it's coming there, right? It's the risk-reward bang for your buck. And we saw this, and I brought this up throughout the week as well, is that last year we saw Utah State get a lot of money in terms of winning the national championship. I don't know if you remember, they were like 150-1 prior to their week one matchup against Alabama. They were getting, the books were getting flooded with a ton of tickets for Utah State money, you know, at the end of the day. We saw, you know, money come come in on Nebraska when Scott Frost was there, right? So it's understandable. But, you know, at 100-1 and the turnover, 51 transfers, and it's Deion Sanders and what he did with Jackson State in turning around that program and bringing them back to respectability, it's the optimism. That's what people love about the college football, is that we had TCU, a 200-1 shot, play in the national championship game. So now any team that can make a 360-degree turnaround like Colorado, that's what people look for. It's a blind bet automatically. So am I going to buy into Colorado? Absolutely not. Do I think he's the right guy for the job? Absolutely. Do I think Shedeur Sanders is one of the best quarterbacks potentially in the conference? Yeah, I do. But now they have to show it along with Travis Hunter, and that's where I think the risk obviously is too much, because the schedule is absolutely daunting, and that's why I bet them. I would take them probably under this season. I'm not betting them in any capacity, but I lean heavily to the under because of the schedule.
When you look at where they stand right now, though, Joe, 3.5 is the win total for Colorado. 3.5, and the under has the juice at -170. So, yeah, optimism is one thing. These are not the sharpest bettors in the world that are putting their money on the Buffs to win the Pac-12 title. I am understanding of that. I'm just trying to explain the expectation. In the same odds component as betting a team to win a conference, which you need to have a good regular season record to even qualify for said conference championship game, there's a difference between attention and what the odds are saying. So 150-1 for Colorado on FanDuel to win the Pac-12, but it's a 3.5 win total. The under juiced at -170. That odds right there, Joe, even with all the reinvention of this roster, and believe me, there had to be a lot of reinvigoration for this roster. Travis Hunter, Shedeur Sanders, plenty more that came over in the transfer portal, but plenty more that left. That was always going to be Coach Prime's plan. With that being said, you also need to field an entire team and an entire roster. I just want to set expectation that the odds makers are expecting Colorado more than likely to win less, 3 games or less next year. 3, 2, 1, or 0. If they win 3 games, they are not going to make it to the Pac-12 championship game.
No, they are not going to make it to the Pac-12. And they play Oregon. They play USC. They play a rivalry game with Nebraska. They play TCU with Chandler Morris. I mean, the list goes on and on. I'm with you. I mean, again, can they win 3 or 4 games? Absolutely, because it's college football and they have a dynamic quarterback. So anything is possible. But expecting that, and expecting that in year one with so much turnover, they have 10 scholarship players on that roster. That is it. 10 scholarship players on that roster from where Carl Durrell had that ball club a year ago. So just think about that. 51 transfers, and this is new talent. These are all kids that haven't played together. So you could have the best players on paper. It's how do you play as a unit? Sometimes the best players don't ever equate to a winning program, right? Look at Nebraska. That was the reason why Scott Frost never elevated the program. They just could never find continuity from an offensive defensive perspective. That takes time to develop. That's on the head coach. And like I said, I think he is the right guy for the job. He's a great motivator, but only time will tell. I'm certainly not doing it in year number one.
No, certainly not doing it in year number one. And again, to see how the odds really feel about the Buffs, not their price to win the Pac-12 and the long shot home run hit you might be able to cash come December. Colorado is a 20.5-point road underdog against TCU week number one. That's how their season starts. That's how the Deion Sanders era in Boulder starts, on the road in Fort Worth against the reigning national runner-ups, who, yes, got demolished in the national championship game against Georgia, but still the national runner-ups in TCU. It's a 3-touchdown spread. Then Nebraska visits Colorado that next Saturday, September 9th, for Coach Prime's home debut in Boulder, a game that you can expect and anticipate a ton of red in the crowd because Nebraska literally shut down the Colorado ticket site for single game sales after the AD there in Boulder, Rick George, said do not sell your tickets to Nebraska fans for Deion Sanders' opening game. The Huskers even, Joe, with a first-year head coach of their own in Matt Rhule, an 8.5-point road favorite in Boulder. Nebraska is a 7.5-point road dog. Their first week on the road in Minneapolis on that opening Thursday night of the year against the Minnesota Golden Gophers. So again, it's not like Nebraska is thought of incredibly highly as a top 15, top 25 team, and yet they're still booked as an 8.5-point road favorite in a game, Joe, that has been a rivalry in Big 8 years past. It was a game where Nebraska virtually had a road game a few years back in Boulder in 2019, and it is a game now where these two coaches, Rhule for the Huskers, Sanders for the Buffs, have exchanged Suttle's war of words throughout the transfer portal and throughout their opening off seasons. One in Lincoln for Rhule, the other in Boulder for Sanders.
Yeah, but I got to respect that, right? They're trying to bring back the rivalry from the Big 8 days. And, you know, we discussed Nebraska used to own Colorado, but it turned in 1989 with a player named Darian Hagan and a running back named Eric Bieniemy. They stepped up. They got the home win in Boulder and followed it up the following year en route to a co-national championship in Lincoln with Eric Bieniemy rushing for 4 touchdowns after 3 first-half fumbles. And at the end of the day, that's what people remember about the epitome of Nebraska-Colorado football. It traveled to Frank Solich in the early part of the 2000s and then all of a sudden went to the wayside. At the end of the day, if they can get back this rivalry, it'll be great for college football. And I have to be honest with you, I think out of both programs, I buy more into year number one with Matt Rhule because it was what he was able to do in Baylor, his ability to coach up the offensive and defensive lines. I think at 14-1, they could be the long shot to win the West.
Nebraska.
Yep.
Wow, Lisi guy.
I said that.
Welcome, my friend.
I said that. They got Jeff Sims. We talked about it. I believe
right.
Matt Rhule, we saw what he did in Temple. We certainly saw what he did in Waco, taking over for Art Briles. That program was in shambles. He took them from 1-11 to basically 12-2, took them to a Big 12 championship game. At the end of the day, I believe he could coach up this offensive defensive lines. That's what Nebraska has missed. I told Carver this, Ben, when Scott Frost took over the program back 6-7 years ago, that was the worst defense almost in the history of Nebraska black shirts defense. They were giving up 195 rushing yards per game. You could go back 40 years to the last time that Nebraska gave up only almost 200 rushing yards per game 5-6 seasons ago. That was how bad Bo Pelini and the rest of those coaches had that program. Callahan, all of them. They ran it right into the ground from the defensive perspective.
I mean, that was a really good call, Joe. Their defense was abysmal. Eric Chenander never really brought it back despite being Scott Frost's guy. However, when you look at Nebraska this year, it starts with Matt Rhule. Now, Joe, I've made this point a few times. I was working and living in Omaha, Nebraska, covering Nebraska when Scott Frost was hired in December of 2017. I said at that time, Joe Lisi, that if Scott Frost was not the coach to return Nebraska back to where its fans expected to be in the glory days of Husker Nation, nobody would ever get that job done. For a variety of reasons, some to the individual person that is Scott Frost, things did not work out in Lincoln. He thought he had a clean bill of goods back at the program that he led to a national championship in 1997. It did not happen. But Matt Rhule is a program builder. First year at Temple, 2012. They go 2-10. The next year, he makes Temple bowl eligible, 6-6. The final 2 years in Philadelphia, Temple was a 10-win football team. Taking over the disaster that was Baylor in 2017, they won a single game. The next year, he got them to 7-6. We'll talk about it up next on FFC.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
One final point here on college football before we turn our attention to some news and notes around the National Football League. Joe, you mentioned that you think Nebraska at 14-1 with four divisions left in two Power 5 conferences at the Power 5 level, that being the Big Ten West, Big Ten East, SEC West, SEC East, you think at 14-1 the Nebraska Cornhuskers might be a long shot play to win the Big Ten West. Is that correct?
Yeah. That's what I'm saying, and I think their schedule is very, favorable to that. I mean, they start, like you mentioned, it's two road games, but Minnesota and Colorado. If Minnesota loses Tanner Morgan, they lose their leading rusher, Mo Ibrahim, to the NFL. So at the end of the day, to give Matt Rhule 6 months of preparation going up against P.J. Fleck in a week zero matchup, I think they could be in that ballgame. They get that victory, they're definitely going to be live, obviously, laying the 7.5 against Dion, then Northern Illinois, La Tech, and then it gets hard. Michigan at Illinois, but Northwestern and Purdue are winnable. At Michigan State without Peyton Thorne and Keon Coleman. Maryland, okay. At Whiskey with a new head coach and obviously new scheme. And then Iowa. I mean, all of those games are winnable outside the Michigan game. No Penn State. No Ohio State. I mean, come on. I mean, I think that's very favorable for a first-year head coach. And I think Jeff Sims is going to be a breakout star in the Big Ten this year.
It will be interesting to see what Jeff Sims does as the go-to starting quarterback now in Lincoln. Of course, the transfer from Georgia Tech. Joe, we mentioned Matt Rhule being a program builder. He took over a Temple team that in his first year in 2013 went 2-10. By no means do people think of Temple as a football powerhouse. He turned them into a 6-6 football team his next year in 2014, a 10-win football team in both 2015 and 2016 in his final 2 years there. And then, Joe, he inherited, quite possibly, the worst disaster of a program run into the ground because of incompetence from Ian McCaw and Art Briles at Baylor. Of course, with all the sexual harassment scandal that played out on campus in Waco, focusing on that Baylor football program. Matt Rhule came in after everything was burnt to the ground virtually and built it back up. 1-11 his first year in 2017. 7-6 with a bowl victory and a bowl appearance, of course, in 2018. And then just 2 years after, Joe, he led Baylor to a Big 12 championship game in a New Year's Six bowl in the Sugar Bowl in 2019. Now, here's what I will say, Joe. People might say, well, his first year at Temple, they won two games. His first year at Baylor, they won a game. Why are you thinking his first year in Lincoln, Nebraska does anything different, then starts off slow, and then maybe in year number two, that's when Matt Rhule can succeed? Is because, Joe, when you think of those other two programs that he inherited, Nebraska, despite the struggles, despite being a 3-win football team, of course, we know everything that happened with the Huskers. Despite all of that, Joe, he inherits a program in Lincoln that is in a much better spot than the other two that he built from the ground up. Although Steve Adazio did have Temple in a decent place a couple years prior. I'm not going to slander everything the Owls did in football. But he built those programs back at the very least. That will be his charge in Lincoln with a proud Cornhusker football program. But he enters a place, Joe, where this team should be much more competitive from the jump than either of his two previous stops in the college ranks.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you 100%. And the defense was slowly starting to become a little more physical under Scott Frost. By no means were they at the pinnacle of Nebraska defense, but if they could take another step, you know, if they could get in the area, and I keep saying like 130 rushing yards allowed per game, they're going to have an opportunity to win ball games. When you win the turnover battle and you're very good against the run in college football, you have an opportunity to pull ball games out. And again, when you look at the quarterback perspective, in terms of all of these games, right? They have the quarterback advantage, in my opinion, against Minnesota. Not against Colorado, but it's going to be a tough ballgame. Michigan, not either. Outside of that, I think they have the quarterback advantage in almost every game. I think Sims is just as good as Talia in Maryland. I mean, Tanner Mordecai is good, but it's a new scheme. It's a new offensive line. There are growing pains in Wisconsin. There's going to be growing pains at Purdue with a new coaching staff. Michigan State, they don't know what we're doing. doing with Mel Tucker. When your leading receiver and quarterback leave about a month and a half ago, that's not a quick fix all of a sudden. So at the end of the day, these teams are ripe for upsets, and as long as Nebraska doesn't start slow, they don't have to start 4-0, but if they're 3-1, 4-2 after the first month and a half of the season, you have an opportunity to become bowl eligible, and that's all you need.
And that's something Nebraska has not done since the 2017 college football season. Joe, I already locked in a long time ago, a couple of months ago now, when they became available, Nebraska over 6.5 wins at plus 120. The schedule is favorable, as you mentioned. To get to 6 wins, to get to 7 wins would be a tremendous start to Matt Rule's tenure in Lincoln. It might not sound like where Nebraska fans want the program overall, but to get there, Joe, to build some optimism into the offseason, not just hope with nothing proven, as we have had the past couple of years in Lincoln, that could be a tremendous start to Matt Rule's tenure, and he'll have the opportunity to do so from the bump against Minnesota in that opening weekend of the year. It's the Thursday night opener for the Big Ten. And then Saturday, the following weekend, Joe, on the road in Boulder against the Buffs. Now, Colorado might not be a great football team, but that is your opportunity then as Nebraska, the more supremely talented team, to even go on the road and win a statement game. That is the opportunity Matt Rule has for his first two games in Lincoln. All right, Joe. Now to the National Football League we go. Two big-time free agents out there still at this point of the summer and the offseason. Dalvin Cook, released by Minnesota a few weeks ago. DeAndre Hopkins, cut by Arizona. Both free agents. They can choose, or at least have a hand in choosing, their next destination. They're not going to handpick all 32 NFL teams, but they can certainly decide where their next NFL home is. Dalvin Cook yesterday, Joe, was on the Adam Schefter podcast with ESPN and said it would be really cool for him. He would really enjoy the idea of teaming up with DeAndre Hopkins at whatever that next stop is in the National Football League. Joe, those are two guys that when you think of Dalvin Cook and DeAndre Hopkins, probably two of the best at their position in the pinnacle of the sport throughout their careers. How much do you think both still have left in the tank?
Well, I think they both have a lot left in the tank. I think Dalvin Cook, 4 straight years with 1,000 yards, over 4.5 yards per carry every single season, is still a home run hitter. Now, you know, obviously throwing a ton of money at running backs teams don't decide to do. And you look at the Ezekiel Elliott, Le'Veon Bell type of situation with both of those aging running backs. That's the downside when you look at Dalvin Cook. However, I don't think he's like that. And when you look at DeAndre Hopkins, I still think, and I know people think he's washed up, but I don't think so in any capacity. I think DeAndre Hopkins is still a top 15 wide receiver. I know Dalvin Cook came out yesterday and said wouldn't it be cool if they both play for the same team? And I threw out, well, then they should play for New England, because New England still could use a home run hitter in Dalvin Cook with Stevenson there. And obviously having D-Hop to help out Mac Jones isn't a bad 1-2 combo.
Yeah, I mean, it would be really interesting to see. We know DeAndre Hopkins did meet with New England, and there's a lot of enthusiasm about some deal being done between those two. It will be interesting, Joe, when you think about D-Hop. I believe, as you do, he still has something left to give. No, he's probably not the DeAndre Hopkins of 2018 in Houston, but when he has been healthy, Joe, he has been incredibly productive. Even last year, after serving a 6-game suspension to start 2022 due to violating the performance-enhancing drug policy of the National Football League, when he came back, he was really good. And Arizona was a dumpster fire last year. Kyler Murray injured at the end of last season. Even when he was out there, play incredibly inconsistent. I think if DeAndre Hopkins, Joe, goes to a suitable area, he is going to produce for that team offensively. And at this stage of the offseason, you probably don't see that big of a difference maker, Joe, still available.
No, you know, but he wants to go to a winner. I can't imagine DeAndre Hopkins, you know, playing his whole career in Houston and last year with Arizona, that all of a sudden he'll just take the money and, let's just say, play for Tennessee. Or Indianapolis. I just don't see that in that type of situation. He wants to go to a team where he could be a benefit and potentially get over the hump. You know, is potentially Pittsburgh an area? I know they have wide receiver depth right now, but you never could say never. You know, is the Bears an an option and they love to run the football, why not have Dalvin Cook and DeAndre Hopkins? And I'm not saying they're a package deal, but if Dalvin Cook is looking for another team, maybe potentially Chicago. I don't know, but I'll tell you what. You can never have too many wide receivers. You can never have too many running backs, especially when we know about playoff wins. The ability to run the football and obviously sustain drives are a huge component to winning road games.
It's really interesting, Joe, as well, when you think of Dalvin Cook now, because it has been reported that Dalvin Cook, whatever team he signs for next, he's not going on a team-friendly or broker deal. He expects to make the money that he is worth. It is interesting to think where Dalvin Cook is at the age of 27, because, Joe, he's made four consecutive Pro Bowls. He's had four straight years of over 1,100 rushing yards and at least six rushing touchdowns while playing in at least 13 games. So even at the running back position, he has remained relatively healthy. So all of that taken into account, Joe, this is not a guy on the tail end of his career. It's not a guy that production is going to drop off in such a stark way in 2023. It's just a running back, unfortunately, that teams and franchises aren't necessarily willing to pay a big long-term contract that would keep him under contract until the age of 29. It's not this upcoming season, Joe, that the Vikings were worried about. It's having Alexander Mattison there and that being the future to be more cost-effective to the team that made more sense for Minnesota. At least I believe that's the rationale. It's not they think Dalvin Cook is washed goods and now done. It's just the idea of paying him in the long term when we do start to see those slides. But I still think, Joe, this upcoming season in 2023, Cook is going to have an impact as well wherever he ends up.
Yeah, and you look at the running back position, right? Miles Sanders moved on, you know, DeAndre Swift now in Philadelphia. There's some running backs that got the money and have suitable situations. And that's why I go to New England, because they only have Ramondre Stevenson and Kevin Harris, the former standout from South Carolina there. There's really no home run hitter that could take it from point A to point B in a flash. Plus, he could catch a football out of the backfield as a safety net for Mac Jones. So for me, I think it's a good fit for them. New England doesn't have a lot of marquee names on the offensive side of the ball. They should be able to find the money to pay Dalvin Cook along with DeAndre Hopkins. Either or, get at least one of them, because I think Bill Belichick, from an offensive perspective, really needs to coach it up if they're going to be playoff eligible. This team is going nowhere. So, I think that's the only way. If Dalvin Cook waits, like I've heard some reports, Ben, he's going to wait and to see if somebody gets hurt week one or week two or in training camp, then you're never going to get the money you want. They're going to get you on the cheap. He's not going to say, well, I want $12 million now. It's going to be like, well, we need a running back now. If you don't want to sign for $7 million or whatever we're offering you, we'll go to somebody else.
Yeah, it will be really interesting, Joe, to see how that plays out, because it's the perceived value, not the perceived production, that might hurt Dalvin Cook. Just if he's looking for a long-term deal, 3-4 years at a certain level of pay, that's not given out to running backs at 27, right or wrong. It's just the philosophy in the National Football League at this point. We'll come back on FFC on the other side of the break with just a few more thoughts here before we round out today's show. That's next on Sports Grid Radio.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Joe, it seems we were not the only radio program today discussing the future or the lack thereof of the Pac-12 conference. Paul Feinbaum, of course, the legendary SEC network voice who knows the Southeastern Conference better than most, joined the McElroy and Kubelik in the morning show today as well. Of course, Greg McElroy, former Alabama quarterback, Cole Kubelik, both of them doing some great work with the SEC network and around the ESPN college football family. And Joe, they asked Paul Feinbaum about the future of the Pac-12. And Paul Feinbaum predicted that by 2026, the conference as we know it will cease to exist. USC and UCLA leaving next year for the Big Ten in 2024. We talked about San Diego State potentially leaving the Mountain West to join the Pac-12, but would that even be a viable option for SDSU if the Pac-12 fails to secure any new TV rights deal? Joe, what do you make of what Feinbaum is saying here, that the Pac-12, as we know it, in this form, in this iteration, might not be around in a couple of years?
I think it's the smartest thing he said in terms of college football, and the only thing I potentially agree with. How about that? I mean, I think he's dead on. I mean, this conference is on life support. That's the bottom line. Once USC and UCLA went out the door, we know that Oregon and Washington are going to follow suit, and then you just have a handful of mediocre teams. That's not a knock, again, on Oregon State, Washington State, Cal, Stanford, Arizona, and Arizona State, but a team end of the day, the big hitters will be gone. And then there's no watchability, there's no marketing value, and there's no sponsorship dollars. That's why I think it's shocking that San Diego State wants to jump for a lateral move.
Here's the thing, and here's where I really look at it, Joe. When you think of the Pac-12, the two cornerstones of that conference now gone to the Big Ten. And without a TV rights deal that makes any of their conference member institutions feel good, we're going to see some people looking to leave, and we're going to see some conferences looking to poach and expand. He's the mastermind of the pigskin. That is Joe Lisi. I am Ben Stevens. Thank you for joining us today on Football Full Circle. The Moneyline is up next on Sports Grid Radio.